This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Scioli podcast.
An incredibly busy day today. The fallout over the IG's report, the articles of impeachment, the president coming to Pennsylvania, and the USMCA trade deal. Looks like it's going to be approved. All of that happening today. Welcome back to the show. Glad you are here. The Scioli Show on Twitter, at Rich Scioli, Facebook.com/Scioli Show. And two big guests on the way, including a member of the House Judiciary Committee and Eric Trump on tonight's rally in Hershey. So, president's coming to Pennsylvania tonight. And you think about, there's an old saying that James Carville used to say. He used to say, Pennsylvania is Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and then Alabama in between. And he's a Southern guy, so he wasn't trying to be insulting, I don't think. But what he was saying was that it's you got blue and then deep red in the middle of Pennsylvania. That's the part that's up for grabs always, because you know the cities are going to go. And Trump country is really, you know, it's outside of Philadelphia. It's and that whole Pittsburgh area and those red counties in the northern part of the state, and the western part of the state, which had better results in the last elections. I mean, the media wants you to believe the Republicans got crushed everywhere in Pennsylvania. That's not true. Yes, Democrats did very well in Delco and Montgomery County and Bucks County. But in the counties outside of Pittsburgh in particular, the Republicans did great. And the president did great there. Holly Otterbein writes for Politico, and she's got a really important piece that she wrote. It's talking about how since Trump has become president, many of the cities in places like Philadelphia have broken hard left. She writes, in the shadow of Joe Biden's campaign headquarters sitting across from City Hall, Elizabeth Warren has snagged endorsements from Mayor Jim Kenney, District Attorney Larry Krasner, and two incoming city council members. It's a far cry from the 2016 primary when this vast majority of the city's Democrat establishment lined up behind Hillary Clinton and gave the cold shoulder to a progressive opponent, Bernie Sanders. From New York City to Los Angeles, many of the nation's biggest cities have turned even harder to the left under President Donald Trump, putting pressure on local officials to embrace the leading progressive presidential candidates or withhold their endorsements entirely for fear of antagonizing newly energized activists. It's a drastic political shift in some places, where for decades entrenched party bosses crushed any signs of life on the left or tended to put the weight of big city institutional support behind Democratic establishment-oriented candidates. I should mention, you know, Holly Otterbein, before she wrote for Politico, used to write for the local newspapers around here and also on the local radio around here. She's been on my show before. She's not a Republican. She's not somebody on the right. She's a good political reporter. I actually think she's one of the best out there. And I think what she's highlighting here is exactly 100% true. Quote, the progressive structural change agenda has captivated the grassroots, and local elected officials are the first people to notice those changes and trends and adapt. According to Maurice Mitchell, national director of the left-wing Working Families Party, there's a ceiling on transactional machine power. It's considerable. It's real. But there's a ceiling on it. Part of the leftward turn is the result of a surge of progressive candidates taking office in recent years. In Chicago, six Democratic socialists currently sit on the city council. All of them have endorsed Bernie Sanders. Krasner, the Philadelphia DA, was elected in 2017 with the aid of the pro-Warren Working Families Party, and Sanders founded Our Revolution. In New York City, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and state senators Jessica Ramos and Julia Salazar endorsed Sanders, and they all won office in 2018. But not all the shift can be explained by newly elected Democrats. The election of Donald Trump changed everything a lot for us. The best way to defeat a troublesome zealot like this is to make the strongest case for dramatic change, and I think Bernie Sanders does that. That's according to a Democrat named Michael Giannaris, the Senate Deputy Majority Leader in Western Queens, who said that. In Philadelphia, Krasner began his political career as a moderate, has fully embraced a progressive agenda in recent years, making it unlikely that he would ever, ever endorse a centrist. The left is so energized in Philadelphia that even Krasner, a progressive darling across the nation, faced backlash from Sanders supporters in the city after he sided with Warren. Krasner said, quote, you're watching an election cycle in which presidential candidates have reason to want the endorsements of big city progressive DAs because they're having to answer questions at debates like, do you think people who are actually incarcerated should vote? That's not even a question you would have heard 8 years ago. Krasner said. The lack of a dominant establishment frontrunner in the primary also means there's a little political debt to pay off for some city officials. More room to support a progressive if they wish to do so. The shifting political class has to some degree created a new class of power brokers. Before he announced he was backing Warren, Krasner said six presidential contenders contacted him in person or over the phone. While she was courting the Working Families Party, Elizabeth Warren threw her weight behind a long-shot left-wing Philadelphia council candidate, Kendra Brooks, who was bucking the entrenched local Democratic Party and running on the group's far-left ticket. She won in November. Sanders has visited the city to protest the closure of the hospital and attend a summit held by the Philadelphia AFL-CIO. A longtime Philadelphia political observer and public relations, Larry Seisler, said, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have been very willing to involve themselves in local issues. And Democrat operatives and elected officials in Philly said Elizabeth Warren's aides in particular have made an aggressive play for endorsements. I'll tell you, as I step back from her article and I think about the, you know, a lot of this also comes from the money that's funding these candidates, right? I mean, obviously, George Soros and his Open Society money, which is going in, and it's just, it's funding candidates left and right. Those candidates are winning. And now they're far left, and they're pushing the Democrat Party so far left that it's unrecognizable in other places in the country. I mean, some of these candidates are just that's what I mean. It's two different worlds. Contrast that with the 31 Democrats who were up for re-election this year from places that Donald Trump won. Contrast what I just read you there, and then the 31 Democrats who were up for re-election in places like, say, Pennsylvania. 31 Trump districts that will determine the next House majority. All right, let's just go through the ones in our area, because I think that's very, very important. New Jersey, District 2. Representative Jeff Van Drew won New Jersey's 2nd District in November after going up against Trump-backed Republican Seth Grossman in his bid to succeed former Representative Frank Lobiondo, Republican who retired in January. Trump beat out Clinton in the district by nearly 5 points. See, Van Drew is against impeachment because he knows that with Trump on the ballot in 2020, it's a whole different ballgame. New Jersey's 3rd district used to be held by my buddy Tom MacArthur. He lost to Andy Kim, a win that left only one Republican in New Jersey's congressional delegation. Trump still carried the district by more than 6 points in 2016. So now, think about this now. Trump wins the 3rd district where I live in Jersey by 6 points, but there's a Democrat congressman. Now, Andy Kim's got to make a decision. Is he going to be for impeachment or against it? He's already voted to advance it. The 5th district of New Jersey, which is up North Jersey, New Jersey's 11th district, Mikey Sherrill. I told you that she's out there getting blasted at town hall meetings where people are going to her, hey, we didn't send you to Washington so that you could do impeachment. Trump won that district by just under 1 point in 2016. It's a battleground, but it was a Republican seat for years. Now let's move over to Pennsylvania, shall we? Because you look at Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania's 8th district. Representative Matt Cartwright won a fourth term in the House in November after beating back a challenge from Republican John Chiron in Pennsylvania's newly formed 8th district. Previously, Cartwright had represented the state's 17th district. Trump won the area by nearly 10 points. District 17, Connor Lamb, Democrat, won his first House seat in the March special election for Pennsylvania's 18th district, but redistricting led him to face off against former Republican Representative Keith Rothfuss in the state's 17th district in November. He won that race by nearly 13 points, despite Trump's 2.6-point victory there in 2016. So you see, the Democrats in these districts, and it's the same pattern across the country, whether you look at, no matter what state you look at, it's the same thing. These Democrats can't run as radical leftist kooks because they're going to get crushed. You can be a radical leftist kook in Philly. I mean, that's the point Holly Otterbein's made. You want to be a radical leftist kook and endorse America's Mother-in-Law or Megaphone Bernie? You can. In fact, the whole city's going with you. But if you want to be a member of Congress and you're running in Western Pennsylvania or South Jersey in a district that Trump won, try being kooky and see how it works out for you. At 9 o'clock today, when they announce the impeachment articles, you're going to have some of the craziest people in Congress, including Maxine Waters. Maxine Waters, of course, who led the biggest low-energy chant in the history of politics with that Impeach 45 chant. She's going to be standing out there with them, standing out there with the Democrats. And she's going to be talking about
Impeach 45!
She's part of the press conference today.
And page 45.
Craziness. Along with Adam Schiff, along with Gerald Nadler, it's a bunch of New Yorkers and Californians in safe, deeply blue, kooky Democrat left districts. Listen, if you're a moderate, you consider yourself a moderate Democrat, and I read you Holly Otterbein's piece, she's not wrong. These cities, these places are going far left into Kookville. That's why, think about it. Ed Rendell, right? Ed Rendell, former mayor, former governor, he's backing Joe Biden. Ed Rendell's a different kind of Democrat. I mean, this is a different Democrat party. The working class, the working families party, it's basically socialist, socialist Democrats. Come on! You know, I'm not this crazy right winger. I consider myself very rational, but these people are crazy left wingers. They are. They just don't. They're not called that. You know, somebody who's really conservative will be called a crazy right winger, but somebody who's crazy left winger, they don't call them that. They just call them. They call them a progressive, because it sounds nice. No, you sat down and had a drink with Ed Rendell. I guarantee you, he would tell you that he thinks these people are freaking nuts. Craziness, and they're going to give Trump the election. He said it on this show. Ed Rendell said, you cannot win an election if you talk about taking away people's health care, putting them into Medicare for all, which is exactly what Elizabeth Warren supports. So there's two different parties right now. The Democrat Party is two different parties. You got, it's pure and utter Kookville in the cities and on the coasts. And then in the middle, you got these districts where moderate Democrats, well, Democrats who won these districts by saying they're moderates have to now run for re-election. So what are they going to do? Are they going to be all in on impeachment, or are they going to vote no? How are they going to try to walk this line? The answer, I believe, surprisingly, is from the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. The vampiric one, Nancy Pelosi, has announced they have a deal reached, and she's going to announce that today. And this is a big win for the president in places like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. But she's doing it because there are these moderate Democrats need something to run on. You got to tell somebody something in these districts that I've achieved this for you. And that's what they believe USMCA will enable these Democrats to do. So my question is, but does she turn to them and say, I gave you the trade, vote for impeachment? Ah, yes or no? That's what I want to know. Will there be a quid pro quo? Either way, it's a huge win for President Trump. As he goes into Hershey tonight, he's going to have an incredibly enthusiastic audience. They're going to be fired up to be there, fired up to defend him, fired up to go vote for him. And he's going to be on the heels of a victorious on the USMCA. Contrast that with the kooks from New York and California and their little impeachment press conference today. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. This is a moment where moderate Democrats have to ask the question, do you recognize your party anymore? Honestly, do you recognize it? You mainline Chablis drinking Democrats, you with your shore houses and your nice cars. Do you recognize this party? Is this your Democrat party? I know that years ago you would have said the Republicans were too far right. And maybe you've already gone to the progressive channel on Sirius XM, but I doubt it. But if you're still listening, do you really recognize this Democrat party of the Larry Krasners and the Jim Kennys and the Working Families Party and everything else and Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders? Is that your Democrat party? Because they're winning everywhere. They're taking over.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
Okay, so let's see. We got a bunch of other things to get to. Guy Reschenthaler will be here at 8 o'clock. He's a member of the House Judiciary Committee. Let's see here. 855-839-1210. Over on the craziness side of the world, and there's a lot of it, one of the guys who's running to try to be a bridge between the progressives and also the reasonable moderate Democrats is Cory Booker. This is his. This is what he's trying to do. He's trying to win over both sides. It's not working for him. Senator Spartacus, Count Grandstangela, and the Tears of Rage Band. It's not working, but he's trying. And he was on with Don Lemon, and he's talking about the Democrat primary process. And he's going on about this, and it's amazing to me how what he says here. It's almost like he's observing and not running for president.
But we have got to be able to have enough money to compete with those people now that are clogging the airways and running their ads. So we really just need help fundraising.
Yeah. Why do you think that has happened? Because we've had it was the most diverse, I think, that we've ever had, right?
Yeah.
Among people who are running for president.
Yeah.
But yet the people who are the diverse folks, right? The black and brown, right? Asian. Haven't caught on. Do you think it's the process?
Yeah, well, this process.
Because you have Republicans are saying, well, the Democrats, you know, they're supposed to be the ones who are, they're diverse and they're woke or whatever, but they're not supporting their diverse candidates.
But that's the process is new this time. And it's excluding folks because remember, 2003, this month, December, John Kerry, John Edwards were polling at 2% and 4%. 4 weeks later, and they had their January primaries back then in the caucuses, they finished 1-2 in Iowa and went on to be our nominee and our vice presidential nominee. And so when you create a debate stage that suddenly has these new artificial barriers, they undermine what has been done. Every single president from our party has been a younger, dynamic candidate, underdog, who's come from behind and won in the caucuses.
So the Democrats don't want anybody like that. They want an old white guy, and that's what they're rigging the election for. It's basically what Cory Booker's saying, right? They're rigging it so that the old white guy will win again. Dems no diversity, hashtag Dems no diversity, hashtag Dems so white. Also, Don Lemon didn't mention that the first gay guy is running too. They're not backing him either. Why is it that the Democrats run out there and they talk about all their diversity and yet their diverse candidates can't catch on? Because the truth of the matter is, it's not about diversity for them. It's about ideology. And you're either all in on the progressive ideology or you're not. That's it. That's the truth. And the only people that are trying to maybe get somebody nominated who's not completely in the Larry Krasner, Elizabeth Warren world, they get then called by their own party members a racist, elitist. I mean, Michael Bloomberg's defending the fact that he's a billionaire. They're not celebrating the fact that he's a billionaire. He's got to go and defend it and apologize for it. That's insane. They're insane. But I mean, if they don't like minorities in the Democrat Party, I don't know what to tell you, Cory Booker. Leave the party, I guess. Your party's racist, man. I guess. And America's mother-in-law, Elizabeth Warren, I have called her America's mother-in-law for quite some time now. And I wondered, too, if it ever offended anybody. Because I think America's mother-in-law, mothers-in-law are, it's a universal feeling, right?
Yes.
Universal. And it's catching on now. We're going to have a special shirt with America's mother-in-law coming to the Zioli Army store soon. So it's catching on. And I thought, well, I mean, this is because everybody can relate to their mother-in-law. And then I was watching TV last night. And then this commercial came on, that insurance commercial with the Mayhem guy. And that guy, was it Allstate?
It's Allstate,
oh,
right?
Yes.
The Mayhem guy. And Tina Fey's in this one, too.
Yes,
which
she is
amazing. She's doing their ad. So take a listen.
I'm your mother-in-law.
Here, start it over, sir. Remember, he does the voices of Mayhem, right? So he's the sound of Mayhem.
I'm your mother-in-law, and I like to question your every move, like this left turn.
It's the next one.
You always drive this slow.
How did you make someone I love?
That must be why you're always so late.
I do not speed, and that's saving me cash with DriveWise.
Yeah, my son, he did say that you were the safe option.
And that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
So get Allstate.
Stop bossing.
Where good drivers save 40% for avoiding mayhem like me. It's my son's favorite color. You should try it.
You always drive like an old lady.
You're an old lady.
Boom!
Oh, that's good.
You see the mocking of the mother-in-law? He even kind of sounds like Elizabeth Warren bit in that,
he
right?
Does, yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, this is something everybody can relate to. Everybody has a mother-in-law for the most part. And there's a reason why Tina Fey agreed to do that ad. Not because it's offensive, but because it's funny.
Yeah.
And it's funny. And there's a reason
it
for
is.
That. And I don't know, he sounded a little bit like her in that ad, did he not?
Yeah.
She is the darling of these progressive candidates in places like Philadelphia. She's the darling of the left. I mean, she and Megaphone Bernie, the two of them are out there. This is who the progressives are all lining up against in a big, big way. And I tell you that it's a battle right now for the heart and soul of the Democrat Party, without question. And then you think about impeachment, how that factors into it. And I've said it before. I'll say it again. I really do believe that Trump benefits from impeachment more than anybody else in this, in my opinion. So as the IG report is, they're beginning to analyze it and go through it. Let me play for you. This is Catherine Herridge, who's moved away from Fox News now. I guess she's over at CBS. She was giving her analysis of the IG's report. Cut 11.
After reviewing more than a million records and conducting more than 100 witness interviews, Inspector General Michael E. Horowitz was harshly critical of the FBI, finding, quote, significant inaccuracies and omissions in the four surveillance warrant applications for Trump campaign aide Carter Page. And while Horowitz said investigators did not find, quote, documentary or testimonial evidence of intentional misconduct, his teams did not receive, quote, satisfactory explanations.
The other analysis of this, which I think is very, very important to take into account, is that when you think about FISA judges who were lied to by the government withheld information, material information that could have, say, cleared Carter Page, for example, John Brennan lying to Congress, you factor in all this stuff. The IG's report would show that they, when they went to get a FISA warrant, omitted statements by George Papadopoulos. They failed to show that the people who were meeting with these people were part of the FBI and the CIA's. They were assets. They were spies. People like Joseph Mifsud. They omitted Joseph Mifsud's denials to the FBI that he supplied Papadopoulos with the information that Papadopoulos shared with the FFG, which suggested that the campaign received an offer or suggestion of assistance from Russia. So they set up this meeting where Papadopoulos goes in, has a conversation. He's their guy that he's meeting with, all completely just to trap him to then get the warrants to spy. It's amazing. And all this stuff is happening. But over at CNN, they don't think it's a big deal. Over at CNN, they looked over there at Anderson Cooper. The FBI was just doing their best. Despite the fact that they crushed and rolled over the civil liberties of Carter Page, they tried really hard. They were just doing their best. Gosh darn it.
The Inspector General's report also identified significant errors in how the FBI conducted what became known as Crossfire Hurricane. Well, keep in mind, what he said is not true there. The report details the ways in which none of that is true. And just for the record, even after receiving the Inspector General's report, the president has continued saying these things. He's mischaracterized what is in the actual report, painting it as a vindication instead of the indictment it actually is, the indictment of what he has been saying. In short, no spying, no political bias, no witch hunt, no traitors. Just human beings doing their best and sometimes falling far short against what they had reason to believe was a serious threat to the country.
Oh, stop it. You're full of it. Just human beings trying their best, doing their best. Robbie Sove writing over at Reason. The IG's report is a huge blow to the FBI's credibility. Why is it being treated like vindication? The Department of Justice Office of the Inspector General's report chronicles serious wrongdoing with respect to the FBI's surveillance of Trump campaign advisor Carter Page and is ultimately a damning indictment of the nation's top law enforcement agency. All Americans should have serious concerns about the FBI's respect for constitutional principles, ability to carefully evaluate conflicting information, and its competency in general. But many of the media have focused on the fact that the IG report failed to turn up any evidence that the FBI's investigation was politically motivated. The Washington Post, their big hot take, was that the report amounted to a triple rebuke of the president and his allies. CNN led with conspiracy theories debunked and called the probe legal and unbiased. In general, the Trump-critical mainstream media has treated the faltering of the most fervent pro-Trump partisans' conspiracy theory about a deep state coup as some kind of full acquittal of the FBI. It is not. The IG report is a chronicle of massive government wrongdoing. But they're just good people trying their best. They were trying their best. Gosh darn it.
No spying, no political bias, no witch hunt, no traitors. Just human beings doing their best and sometimes falling far short against what they had reason to believe was a serious threat to the country.
I just did my best by lying to a FISA judge, omitting serious information and evidence, lying to Congress about the dossier after I inserted it in the president's national security briefing. I'm a fallible human being. What can I tell you? I'm prone to mistakes. It's amazing. Amazing. And I should also mention to you that when this came out and everybody's looking at all this, they're now turning their attention to John Durham, who's the attorney general from Connecticut. He is leading the investigation into all this, the actual real investigation that'll have some teeth. And Durham put out a statement yesterday saying he disagrees with the IG's conclusion that the report was not politically motivated. That's a key takeaway. If nothing else, take that into account.
Thanks for taking The Zeoli Show with you, Rich Zeoli. Weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Very excited to have back on the show the congressman from Pennsylvania, member of the House Judiciary Committee, Guy Reschenthaler. Guy, welcome back.
Rich, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It's great to see you at the White House. That's the last time you were on the show at the White House live when we were talking about the USMCA. And by the way, let's talk about that real quick, because I hear rumors that a deal has finally been reached.
I think that we're going to see USMCA pass either later this week or next week. But we got to remember, we can't applaud Nancy Pelosi on this. This deal should have been done months ago. The American worker, the American farmer has been waiting for this. So the fact that she's letting this hit the floor now shows that she's stalled. It also shows she's continuing to play politics. She's only doing this because impeachment is beating the Democrats up so bad that she needs a win.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And she thinks this is going to play well in those districts that the president won in 2016, that Democrats won in 2018. But my question, Guy, is there a quid pro quo for them? Do they have to vote for impeachment in order for USMCA to come to the floor?
So I don't know the inner workings behind Nancy Pelosi's team. She's a really good counter of votes. She also rules with an iron fist. I'll give her that. But we got to remember, this is no longer Nancy Pelosi's Democrat Party. This is no longer the Democrat Party of JFK, your grandfather. This is AOC's Democrat Party, and they're going to be fervent about impeachment. And we're seeing that from them. I mean, they were going nuts over this impeachment, even though in the polls, they're dropping. And President Trump is ahead in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan. All those swing states he needs to win, he is well ahead of his Democrat opponents. And in the battleground districts, those are the districts that Trump won, but Democrat congressmen and women represent, those Democrats are just getting pounded and plummeting in the polls.
Well, I was going to say, your district, the 14th district, Trump country, how's it playing up there?
In my district, Southwest Pennsylvania, over 60% of people are against impeachment. And then a lot of people who are, I'd say, undecided voters, they're not supportive of impeachment. They'd much rather see us do things like free trade agreements, like USMCA. They'd rather see us work on a transportation and infrastructure package to fix roads and bridges. And I forgot to mention prescription drug prices. People are sick of paying such high for these prescription drugs. There's certain changes we can do, very small tweaks to law that would reduce the cost of these drugs.
Guy Reschenthaler is with me. He's a member of Congress, 14th District of Pennsylvania, and a member of the House Judiciary Committee. Guy, I listened to you yesterday. You did a great job. I really like what you started with by talking about you were in the Navy. Is that right?
Yes, I was a Navy JAG. I prosecuted terrorists in Iraq. I defended a Navy SEAL falsely accused of covering up abuse on the Butcher of Fallujah, a terrorist. So, yes, was in the Navy.
Amazing stuff. And you said at the beginning we had an expression in the Navy.
Bluff, bottom line up front. That's how we were taught to always communicate.
Bottom line up front. And bottom line up front is that there is no evidence that the president committed any crimes.
None whatsoever. And you see the Democrats backtracking on this. We got to remember, a few weeks ago, they were calling this a quid pro quo. They then tested that in a focus group, a Democrat focus group. It went over poorly. So they changed the language to bribery. Now, today, I wake up and all the news articles are calling it, quote unquote, abuse of power. The reason is because abuse of power is much more amorphous. It's much more flexible. They know they don't have the evidence to support either quid pro quo or bribery. So now they've just defaulted to this ambiguity of abuse of power. It would be helpful if it wasn't hurting the country so badly.
Now, Guy, they say they're going to vote on the articles of impeachment today. As a member of the House Judiciary Committee, it's got to be so frustrating for you. Nadler is just rude. I mean, the guy doesn't let any Republicans speak. He's constantly banging the gavel. I mean, it's just showing zero respect for the minority party here.
We're just waiting to retake back the House. And I said this to some of my colleagues that are younger the other day. I said, just wait till one of us, because a lot of my colleagues on that panel were in their mid-30s, right?
So you're in your mid-30s, right? I just want to...
30, 36. Got elected at 35, 36. But I can tell you, we're going to be around long enough to remember when we were in the minority and Jerry Nadler banged his gavel and wouldn't even let us put forth motions. I'm not saying that we're going to treat the Democrats the same way when we retake back the House, but that's certainly going to be in our memory. But yes, so Jerry Nadler is totally outgunned by Doug Collins, who's our ranking member. Doug Collins was just on fire yesterday. And you have to remember, too, that the judiciary panel is stacked, that our committee is stacked. We've got Jim Jordan, John Ratcliffe, we've got Gates, Johnson. We've got a whole bunch of former federal prosecutors and defense attorneys, people with experience. You don't see that as much on their side. That's why Jerry Nadler has to gavel us down, because he knows that we have the upper hand on legal experience.
Guy, it was amazing to turn on the TV yesterday and watch this and realize that you guys were, I mean, really the Democrats, but they were interviewing staff members. I mean, that's what yesterday was about. They were asking questions of staff.
So in the past, whenever there's been an impeachment, you've had a special prosecutor come before the committee and testify. So you'd have Ken Starr. The Democrats did this with Mueller. They brought him forth. Here in this impeachment, you have Schiff, who has basically acted like a special prosecutor, yet he didn't come before the panel to ask questions. He sent his staff members, and then Jerry Nadler changed the rules to have staff members question the staff member. Last time look, I've got nothing but respect for the staff. They're incredible people. They're public servants. I think the world of them. But they didn't get elected, right? And they're not accountable to the people. At the end of the day, they're unelected bureaucrats. So why are the members elected by the people not handling this? Why are we deferring to staff? It's strange. But I think it goes back to the fact that the Democrats are outgunned and out-talented on the Judiciary Committee, so they've got to rely on their staff.
Guy Reschenthaler is with me. He is a member of Congress from Pennsylvania. He's on the House Judiciary Committee. He's doing a great job on that committee. It was a pleasure listening to you push back on them yesterday. Absolutely enjoyed that. From my perspective, I enjoyed it. But for you, though, I mean, it's got to be frustrating, because I know you went to Congress to try to get stuff done. It's got to be frustrating on this committee, although I think about it from this perspective. When you guys win back the majority and you're on the House Judiciary Committee, Guy, you'll be able to deal with what the IG exposed yesterday in their report and what John Durham, I hope, will expose even greater in the future. I mean, there were some serious violations of civil liberties of Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, real wrongdoings done by people at the highest levels of the FBI and I believe the CIA as well.
Yes, and you know, we're not going to demonize the entire FBI. It wasn't the FBI. It was the top echelon of the FBI and what we're calling the cabal, right, with Page and with Comey, what they were doing. I've got a lot of questions. I haven't read the entire report because yesterday I was in that Judiciary Committee all day, but I can tell you from what I'm hearing on it, I've got serious issues with exculpatory evidence to help the president not being turned over to the FISA court. I've got serious issues with the FBI not giving what's called a defensive briefing to the Trump campaign. That's when you know somebody is a target of a spy. You usually go and tell them that they're a target, and they get this briefing so they're on guard. That was never done. So the Trump campaign was led down this path. The FBI, the top echelon, used it as an excuse to spy, and they can call it survey, but let's call it what it is. They were spying on a domestic political campaign. That's got to come to light. That needs explored, because if you're talking about abuse of power, there was no abuse of power with the president. The abuse of power was the cabal, the upper echelon, the FBI. The other abuse of power was Schiff when he took another member of Congress's phone number and did a search through data, released the call log of another member of Congress. Totally inappropriate.
Yeah, that's amazing that happened. Absolutely amazing. All right, so what time is your committee hearing today?
Well, today the Democrats are going to announce what the articles of impeachment will be on Thursday. Then Thursday we'll go into what's called a markup, and that's when we can offer amendments on the articles of impeachment. We can debate the articles of impeachment. That hearing will probably be Thursday, maybe bleed over to Friday or Saturday. We'll see how it goes. At that point, Jerry Nadler, and look, I expect the Democrats to vote in lockstep. This will be a totally partisan hit job on the president. But then Jerry Nadler will send those articles to Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi will put them on the floor either next week or the week after, and we'll vote on them. And then at that point, if the president is impeached, he will then go to the Senate to the Senate will then try him and decide if he stays in office or not. And I don't, no spoiler alerts here, but the Senate's not going to remove the president. Complete right. waste of time.
So he's going to get to start 2020 in his reelection year being vindicated by the Senate. I just think the Democrats are playing this so poorly from a political perspective. They're going to wrap up impeachment before the end of the year, and he gets to start fresh in 2020 with a trial that says not guilty. Go enjoy the rest of your term. But what you said earlier, Guy, is exactly right, Congressman. You said it earlier. You said it. It's no longer Nancy Pelosi's party. The lunatics are now running the asylum here,
right.
and they're not thinking politically. It's all emotion for them, and it's just rabid hatred of the president. If they were thinking politically what's expedient, they would never play it like this, not in a million years.
Right. If you want to know what Nancy Pelosi is going to do tomorrow, read AOC's tweets today.
Right.
Because AOC is running this party, and she's running it into the ground.
Congressman Guy Reschenthaler, you're always welcome on the show, my friend. Keep up the great work on the House Judiciary Committee. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Care.
Thanks for taking the Zeoli Show with you. Rich Zeoli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
All right. So a big, big, big busy day, of course, and the president coming to Pennsylvania tonight in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Let's say good morning to Dawn. Check in.
And good morning. We're checking in at 55 degrees cloudy with rain beginning in 3 hours. Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, Zeoli Show News, brought to you by Exergen. So Pennsylvania State Police are already giving a heads up to thousands headed to Hershey for this big Trump rally, which begins 7 p.m., but they're saying doors open at 3 p.m. Vice President Mike Pence also scheduled to attend as the campaign offers this rare double billing. So police security officials say they expect the giant center there in Hershey, which I looked up, it is listed as holding 10,500 seats, and they're saying they're expecting it could fill up before everybody with a ticket gets inside. So based on these free tickets, which are, you know, they're reserved for free, but the campaign is already setting up outdoor monitors and speakers so people outside can see and hear. And in the region, they're offering free live streaming services, too, for people. So you heard Zeoli say that Trump is expected to take this victory lap over what he calls a historic deal. Say goodbye to NAFTA. Hello, USMCA. Canada and the U.S. reportedly reaching this last-minute deal to save a trade pact with Mexico. And there are reports that the unions actually pressured Democrats who were accused of stalling it during impeachment proceedings. The union workers support it. So I just want to remind you to listen to the Zeoli podcast, especially from November 19th and 20th. For truly the best, most thorough coverage on USMCA that I have seen anywhere, which impacts all of us, especially in Pennsylvania. So Zeoli live from the White House. We were there. He interviewed every top biggity big, every top player, including, of course, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who told Zeoli at the time that USMCA is much better on key issues than any trade deal in U.S. history. And Ross also told Zeoli that its delay has already cost the country and the economy, could cost us billions of dollars. So the 19th and 20th podcasts are just incredible.
Thanks. You know, that's a good point. We should repost
yes.
those. Maybe we'll repost them today so people can have easy access to them just in case, right?
Yeah, I've come across people who said, hey, I've listened to those just to know more about this USMCA. What is this about?
Right.
Because it's not really being covered as much as you covered it with all those extensive interviews and explanations and everything. I looked for a positive headline when you were doing your interview and the point came up, to your point, that who's getting credit. And I found on the South China Morning Post, They were the only headline, South China, giving U.S. President Donald Trump credit for, quote, this is a quote, triggering a review of the 94 trade pact after Trump called it one of the worst deals in history. So I found that interesting. I really could not find on American mainstream media, you know, positive headlines.
Shocking.
Other news, a headline from the Supreme Court, which did rule yesterday to leave in place that Kentucky law requiring doctors to perform ultrasounds and show those fetal images to patients before they have a procedure to end their pregnancy. Russia banned from the world's top sporting events for 4 years, including the next summer and Winter Olympics and the 2022 Soccer World Cup for allegedly tampering with doping testing. And finally, there was a class assignment, this from the Dumbest Teacher Ever Award. A class assignment landed a Missouri teacher on administrative leave and has the NAACP calling for a formal apology. So this was a grade school in Missouri. Students in a fifth grade class asked to do an assignment, setting prices for different things and then reflect on the topics of a free market. So, you know, things like lumber, wool, milk, etc. But then the final question says, you own a plantation or farm and you need workers. You begin to get involved in the slave trade industry and have slaves work on your farm.
Oh, boy.
And then it says that they posted this online. It's gone viral. Your product to trade is slaves. Set your price for a slave. This could be worth a lot. Can you imagine?
No, I can't.
I thought it was fake news. This could not happen.
Where now? What school district is this? Where is this?
This is Missouri, Melville, Missouri. So wow. I mean, I can't even wrap my brain around it. But it just
there's probably another way to do an economics lesson than using slaves. Yeah. I'm throwing that out there.
Jeez,
but
Louise, at least the students had the wisdom to say, whoa, wait a minute, fifth graders, are you as smart as a fifth grader? Apparently the teacher was not, right? And just finally, a plea from health officials, please get your flu shots. They say flu season is here early, and with holiday gatherings, they're saying, oh boy, this thing could really spread across the country. So eyewitness weather, we're going to have rain. It comes in today, and then we drop like a rock tonight, 30 degrees. So 59 degrees is the high today. We drop like a rock tonight, and then we'll see some snow flurries and wet snow for our morning commute tomorrow, and then it clears out. It'll be fine tomorrow, 40 degrees and sunny the next day. Exergen, 30 million people.
By the way, you forgot the most important story.
I'll tell
you that in a second. Go ahead.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh, yeah.
Exergen. So we've been talking about the flu, and it could be the worst season ever. The best way to tell if it's cold or flu, take your temperature. Nobody does that better than the Exergen temporal scanner. Learn more at exergen.com. Dawn, always on the radio.com app.
So they did a survey of the things that people steal from five-star hotels.
Yes.
Do you know the number one thing that people steal from hotels?
The robe.
Luxury hotels.
The robe.
Good question. Good answer. Try again.
Towels.
Try again.
Sheets.
Try again. The mattress.
What?
According to the survey, yeah. The most stolen item from luxury hotel rooms. 49 hotels say their mattresses have been stolen from the premises. Luxury five-star hotels. Somehow in the middle of the night, these people are taking the mattress out of the room and loading it up on the back of the car and driving away.
I love this. Nobody sees them? Like their security camera? Like, what do? Throw it out the window somehow?
I mean, it's probably not the most stolen thing. It's probably still his towels, but I don't care, one mattress gets stolen. That's newsworthy for me. Would you ever take a mattress from a hotel room?
Are you kidding me?
You wouldn't even sleep on a mattress in a hotel room, right?
When the old Four Seasons closed here in Philadelphia, they were selling the mattress, because those things go for the hotel mat. They're like worth thousands and thousands. But I would never buy a used mattress because I'm a germ freak.
Shocking, right?
You'd burn it first.
Yeah.
You'd have to literally burn it first. People steal from hotel rooms. They steal coffee machines, stuffed animals. They steal towels, of course. They also steal furniture. Some people have been caught on security camera footage transporting the mattress to the elevator, and they can't fit it in. And then security guard has to come over. And so many four-star hotels are now tagging items to trigger alarms when smuggled off the premises. And five-star hotels are less likely to confront thieves or report the theft to the police because they don't want to be connected to crime. So,
but they could put an electronic tracker on it.
They
like
could
a chip, and then they could just charge you. That's what they do with the robe. They say if you take the robe, we'll charge you.
Yeah, we just charge you.
Charge your credit card.
Or they could just have a surveillance camera that shows a giant mattress being left from
a dope walking down the hallway with a giant mattress under his arm, and then send the mattress police after him. The same people that go after you if you take your tags off. The mattress police. That's what you do. You send them to the house. Get that mattress back. Oof. I would hate more than anything to find out that the mattress that I'm sleeping on in a hotel was once stolen and then recovered. I think that'd be even worse.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
Let's go to Jim and Claymont. Yes, Jim, you're going to make a confession
here?
Hey,
Rich, here? I haven't talked to you in a while, buddy. How you been?
You're going to make a confession here, is that right?
Yeah, I was literally down the shore this weekend at Harris. And you know what? You want to charge me $45 for a cheeseburger or a couple eggs? I'm taking a couple towels with me. That's all I ever take.
So your theory is you get overcharged the towels. You're entitled to those towels.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't have no right. And, you know, I go to Mass every week. But you know what? To me, I rationalize it. What's it? It's a good rationalization in the Big Chill. I rationalize it. I don't feel no guilt.
Okay, fair enough. Why don't you steal a mattress then while you're at it?
No, I won't do that. They're just, you know, that's it. I used to love the little ketchup bottles, but they don't even put them in there anymore. You don't steal them, they give them to you.
Ah, it's too bad. Now, do you ever get charged for the towels? Have you ever gotten a bill?
No, not good. I don't think so. I go to half-decent hotels, and I'm a rewards member on a lot of them, so we got, you know, but
yeah, actually,
it really makes me laugh.
Yeah, if you call the hotel up and you say, no, listen, I didn't steal the towels. They're not going to fight you on it, right? They're not going to fight you.
What are they going to do? They're going to send the FBI out? Sometimes you got to take the risk that it's so minimal. Is it worth the aggravation for them to charge you? That's what I would look at, too.
I stole windows from a hotel. I redid my house with them.
True story. Have a good day, Rich.
Thanks,
good,
Jim. Man. Appreciate it. 855-839-1210. True story right there. It's 100% true. It's basically true. Basically. Let's see here. Let's see. The IG report, which is out. By the way, Eric Trump will be on the show in a little bit. We'll talk to Eric about the big Pennsylvania rally tonight. Let's see here. Over at CNN, the IG report, they found many instances of substantial inaccuracies in FISA applications. Jake Tapper and Evan Perez.
But the report, of course, also outlines some very significant errors made by FBI officials.
That's right. There were 17 total instances in which there were substantial inaccuracies or omissions that were left out of these FISA applications. These are surveillance warrants that were targeting Carter Page, who, as we mentioned, was an advisor for the campaign. According to Horowitz, there were 17 such instances in which things were left out or was just plainly inaccurate. And these were four different warrants, Jake, that got approval from a court. And in each case, the FBI simply failed to update the information for the judges that were reviewing these warrants.
How about that, huh? 17 different areas where the FBI at the echelons completely abused civil liberties. Absolutely no doubt about it. NBC's Pete Williams, even having to admit over at NBC, the IG's report found the FBI screwed up at every level.
What it says is the FBI basically repeatedly screwed up at every level, failing to pay enough attention to potential problems with Steele, failing to tell the Justice Department. And it says at one point that the FBI decided to seek this FISA warrant, even at the risk of being criticized for doing it later, because the report says FBI officials, said they had to get to the bottom of a potentially serious threat to national security. But the Inspector General report says the FISA application was in many ways inaccurate, incomplete, or unsupported. It says, for example, that the FBI failed to look at some of problems in Steele's past work, that was never sufficiently addressed. As for why these things happen, the Inspector General says it reaches no conclusions about that. It says it received no satisfactory explanation about how all these mistakes happen. And the Inspector General report, Lester, and I just make the final point here before I turn it back to you, says that the Inspector General is so concerned about these problems that if the FBI, in his view, so mishandled this FISA application for an investigation into a candidate for president, then How is it doing it for garden variety people who are subject to these warrants? And for that reason, we learned today that the Inspector General is now opening a new investigation on how the FBI gets these FISA warrants on American citizens' lists.
Boom, right there. That's it. If they can do this to a presidential candidate, they can do this to a campaign, what can they do to everybody else? Right there. Boom. Some of the other highlights of their 17 screw-ups. They failed to update the description of Christopher Steele after information became known to the Crossfire Hurricane team, not only from Bruce Orr, but from others, that provided greater clarity on the political origins and connections of Christopher Steele's reporting, including that Simpson was hired by someone associated with the Democrat Party and or the DNC. Omitted from information from Department Attorney Bruce Orr about Steele and his election reporting, including that, number one, Christopher Steele's reporting, he's the guy that did the dossier, right, was going to Clinton's presidential campaign. Two, Simpson was paying Christopher Steele to discuss his reporting with the media. Three, Christopher Steele was desperate that Donald Trump not get elected and was passionate about him not being U.S. president. Why does all this matter? It matters because the dossier that Christopher Steele compiled was the basis of the warrants they got before the FISA court. They failed to correct the assertion in the first FISA application that the FBI did not believe that Steele directly provided information to the reporter who wrote the September 23rd Yahoo News article, even though there was no information in the Woods file to support this claim. And even after FBI officials involved in Crossfire Hurricane learned in 2017, before the third renewal application of the warrant, of an admission that Christopher Steele made in a court filing about his interaction with the news media in the late summer and early fall of 2016. In other words, after they got the first warrant, as they go back to have the warrants renewed, new information came to light. They didn't share that information with the judge. They never told the judges that Steele was suitable for continued operation. They said that his past contributions to the FBI's criminal program had been minimally corroborated. They're trying to say, you know, he's suitable to continue here because we've done stuff with him in the past, but they mischaracterized that, trying to say that he was used in criminal proceedings, and that's not true. They omitted Papadopoulos, George Papadopoulos. They omitted his statements to an FBI CHS. Now, this confidential source, spy, in late October 2016, denying that the Trump campaign was involved in the circumstances of the DNC email hack. It's one of the setups. When they had somebody sit down with Papadopoulos to have a conversation with him, it was a setup. But they admitted that. They omitted that from the application. They omitted that, the fact that Carter Page said, that Papadopoulos said, no, we were not involved in the DNC email hack. They omitted Joseph Mifsud's denials to the FBI that he supplied Papadopoulos with the information that Papadopoulos shared. Remember, that information that he shared would ultimately be the basis for them spying, right? So it was an absolute setup. They omitted evidence indicating that Carter Page played no role in the Republican platform change on Russia's annexation of Ukraine, as alleged in the Steele report, which was inconsistent with a factual assertion relied upon to support probable cause in all four FISA applications. The Christopher Steele dossier was so full of lies and BS. This is the P dossier, too, the same one that alleges the president, you know, rented these rooms in Russia and you know the rest. This dossier was so wrong in so many areas, unverified, absolute lies. They knew some of it was wrong, but they omitted that from the judges and they relied on the dossier anyway, even though it was paid for by the Clintons, even though it was used and it was being used politically. That was the basis of getting these warrants. Now, as to this theory that this was never political in motivation, which again, Jake Tapper, good people just trying their best. Good people just doing their best.
It was Anderson Cooper.
Or Anderson Cooper, yeah. Right. As they completely erode the civil liberties
just
of Carter Page and George. Yeah, go ahead.
Just human beings doing their best and sometimes falling far short against what they had reason to believe was a serious threat to the country.
Well, John Durham disagrees with that point, by the way, that they had reason to believe there was serious threat to the country and they're just good people who made mistakes. Statement of United States Attorney John H. Durham. He's the one investigating this with the tooth. Quote, I have the utmost respect for the mission of the Office of Inspector General and the comprehensive work that went into the report prepared by Inspector General Horowitz and his staff. However, our investigation is not limited to developing information from within component parts of the Justice Department. Our investigation has included developing information from other persons and entities, both in the U.S. and outside of the U.S. Based on the evidence collected to date, and while our investigation is ongoing, last month we advised the Inspector General we do not agree with some of the report's conclusions as to the predication and how the FBI case was opened. This idea that good people were just trying to keep America safe, John Durham's office disagrees with that. This idea that this was never opened as a political investigation, that this wasn't politically motivated, that they had real reason to believe we were at risk by the evil Russians. John Durham's statement says, we don't believe that. We don't believe that. That's why I can't wait for John Durham's report to come out. I think it'll be, hopefully, the everything we need to know with regards to what actually took place. But remember something now. The spin by the media as it goes through the cycle of spin, and it's going to go through a lot of that, as you can imagine. John Durham's report comes next. It comes after this. It comes down the road. It doesn't come tomorrow. It comes in a few months. So Donald Trump could have 2020. Think about this from a perspective of a political victory, right? He could have 2020, a Senate trial that says not guilty, go back to being president, a report that comes out by John Durham, which says serious crimes were committed and maybe goes after people with indictments. Maybe. I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying it could, right? And vindicates everything the president's been saying about how the government was targeted against him. Starts the year with a new trade deal, USMCA. Starts the year running for re-election with one of the strongest economies we've ever had. It's a pretty good place to be, is it not? I mean, that's a pretty solid way to start 2020. That's a solid way to start the year, or even half the year. It's a solid way to enter the general election, that's for sure. Because by then, all these things will have played out. All this will have played out by then. And that's why that's what I said to Guy Reschenthaler earlier. I can't understand the stupidity of the Democrats here. Why they would want to do this now before Christmas and then just have it over with.
Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.